For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It ain't the left side or the right side, then it must be the fin side.
Good evening, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode here of On the Fin Side with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, as well as finfanatic.com and the Fansided Network. We are 7 days away from the NFL draft. In fact, as we're recording this, it's officially less than 1 week until the draft. Absolutely incredible, and we will be there every step of the way up until draft day, as well as on draft day, day one and day two, as well as the pick recaps. We are previewing here the cornerback class, and this is a position here with obviously the Dolphins are very well stocked with Byron Jones and Xavier Howard, a cornerback. Nick Needham was a pleasant surprise last year in the slot. Noah Igbinoghene had a rough rookie year, but you know, somebody we expected to be a little bit green. But Paul, the way I look at the class here is, it is a great cornerback class if you need a cornerback in the top 10. It is a great cornerback class if you need a slot cornerback. It's a great cornerback class if you need a zone cornerback throughout the draft, but not necessarily a great draft for man-to-man cornerbacks per se, really in that second, third, fourth round area that we expect the Dolphins to be looking at.
Hey Dolphins fans, this podcast is brought to you by Danette May and Mindful Health LLC, featuring Danette May's top superfood product from her Earth Echo Foods line, Cacao Bliss. Nothing feels better than being able to enjoy rich, smooth, creamy chocolate and knowing you are doing something good for your body. We start with 100% organic cacao beans that are naturally kissed by the sun, maintaining its miraculous health benefits. Then we blend it with turmeric, MCT oil, coconut, Himalayan sea salt, cinnamon, and black pepper for the perfect blend to make you feel the best you ever have. The result? Fall in love with a truly decadent, healthy, guilt-free chocolate, removing your cravings, facilitating weight loss, boosting your energy, and reducing your inflammation with one simple drink. Not only that, it is friendly to paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegan, and vegetarian diets. For the last 8 years, we've been a leader in the superfoods market and are proud to have served millions of customers worldwide. We are offering up to 15% off when you use code MINUTE15 at earthechofoods.com/minutemedia. Follow on social media at the Danette May and at Earth Echo Foods.
Yeah, and I mean, the good thing here is what Miami really needs is a slot corner. So this should be a great draft for them. There's a handful of guys that I would potentially look at after round one for the boundary to develop. I mean, Ife Melifonwu, not because, you know, we all know I was a fan of Obi Melifonwu, but just Ife has all the traits and he's still trending up at corner. And given the fact he's got all the traits and all the God-given athletic ability in the world, you know, if you were to take him on as a developmental opposite Igbinoghene, it would be a scenario, I think, where you would see them be the corners of the future in Miami. For whatever point Miami was ready to move on from either Exer or Byron Jones.
You would be interesting there later in the draft. You know, I think maybe not necessarily later in the draft. I'm thinking I expect him to come off the board like in that third round area kind of. And yeah, if you hit on that with the physical measurables that he has, yeah, you hit big. The other part of that, there's a very high bust rate with a Fatu Melifonwu as well, as we saw with his brother, Obi Melifonwu. Frankly, I think if they had played him at cornerback from the beginning and he had stayed healthy, maybe his career had gone a little bit better. But we'll get to him in a bit. You know, this is a position where I'll say over and over again, the Dolphins need great cornerbacks in order for this defense to work. And they need him every single year because they ask the cornerbacks to do a lot on this defense. It's no coincidence. They shelve out the money for Byron Jones. They have Xavier Howard playing a full year. And he's, in my opinion, in our opinion, the best cornerback in the NFL last year. And the Dolphins have a great defense. How great, you ask? You take a look at the Dolphins' pass defense last year. They had several major categories, Paul, that finished in the top seven. Turnovers, first. Third down defense, first. Quarterback rating of opposing quarterback, sixth. Points allowed, sixth. Completion percentage, seventh. So not a coincidence that they have an elite secondary, and we see such a turnaround there on defense with Xavier Howard staying healthy and the addition of Byron Jones.
Yeah, and I want to park on that for a second with it because, you know, I wound up having a conversation with Alain Poupart and a couple of folks out on Twitter this past week about people don't appreciate the season that Byron Jones put up at corner. Without the season Byron Jones had, Xavier Howard would have not gotten what he did. It speaks volumes that while Byron did not pack the stat sheet, teams were still throwing at Xavier Howard repeatedly, given the fact that he was just destroying everybody back there. So that should tell you that alone, you know, without even looking at a single other stat, should tell you how good of a season people were having on the opposite side. Because if Byron wasn't having that season over there, guess what? They wouldn't have thrown at X. They would have continually thrown at Byron Jones to just roast the guy. And that didn't happen. They kept trying to challenge Howard. And that says a lot about our starting corners.
And I blame PFF for that. The hatred with Byron Jones. Hatred's a strong word. But the idea that Byron Jones was somehow a disappointment at the cornerback spot. What a joke. I mean, Byron Jones changed the way the Dolphins played defense by being able to man up. And look, I subscribe to PFF. We reference them on the show. I think their podcasts are second to none, but I don't pay attention to their cornerbacks and defensive back and linebacker ratings because it's so hard to judge who was at fault for what. And, you know, what was one game besides the Raiders game where Byron Jones played poorly? None. I don't agree with that whatsoever. And if Byron Jones were ranked in the 70s by PFF's grades instead of in the late 50s, I assure you the whole rhetoric would be different on him.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've said it multiple times here on the show. PFF is a great resource. It is not in any way, shape, or form the be-all, end-all of what you should believe you saw out on the field. It's a tool, but it's not always accurate. Numbers don't lie, but you can lie with numbers. And PFF has some bright and shining examples of that, especially when, you know, you look at positions like that, you look at like offensive line at times and things like that. So, I mean, we could soapbox all day about PFF, and maybe we will at some point. But for right now,
I like PFF. I just don't like them when it comes to grading cornerbacks. One last example is in 2017, Xavier Howard against the Falcons. Xavier Howard holds Julio Jones to 5 catches for 41 yards against Julio Jones in his prime. And he was given a very, very poor rating for that game. Why? Because he was blamed for a 55-yard touchdown from Marvin Hall that Nate Allen said himself after the game he was responsible for. And they didn't change that rating. So that can make a difference.
I sadly remember that exact play.
It was Nate Allen's fault. And it's hard to tell when Marvin Hall is running between a cornerback and a safety. So anyway, moving on.
Kat, before we actually move on, we actually have some other Dolphins news we haven't even touched on yet. And guys, make sure you're clicking that like button. DJ Fluker, I can't believe we didn't even touch on this yet. It's been days since we've been on here. What are your thoughts?
It is. I thought it was a good signing. I mean, you know, DJ Fluker back in 2013, I never understood why this guy was a mid first round pick, or I think he was the 11th overall pick. He was a oversized, powerful right tackle, but he's hung around the league, and you're talking about him now in the context of a good depth at right tackle and right guard. I'm all in for it on a cheap contract. I think he would provide good depth.
I absolutely was for it. The fact that he can, as you said, play multiple positions, and, you know, yes, he's 30 years old, but he can play multiple positions well, and I like the signing a lot. And I also think the writing's a little bit on the wall that Miami's not looking to heavily go offensive line in this draft. They're just trying to tweak and upgrade where they can, other than maybe the center position.
Yeah, when it comes to the tackles and guards, I gave up on Penny Sewell being a possibility a while ago for that reason, because they're looking for the exact size DJ Fluker is, 6'5", 340 pounds. That's what Isaiah Wilson was. That's right at what Robert Hunt is, right at what Solomon Kindley is. Austin Jackson is 20 pounds lighter, but 6'5", 320. They're looking for big dudes on the offensive line that they can groom. Fluker's a veteran, and he's not a groomable type guy, but he's a big dude. He's going to provide good tackle at or good depth at guard and tackle. I think he's a better guard than he is a tackle. So, speaking of guys that aren't fat here, the cornerbacks here that we're talking about.
I brought it back to my fat guys?
How do you like that segue, huh? I mean, just smooth as silk.
You're just rubbing it in on me because you know I like talking about the fat guys.
That's true. But at cornerback, with the Dolphins, such a position that is great importance in this defense. It is not a need right now. Xavier Howard's 28. Byron Jones is 29. In 2 years, I will promise you this, it will be a need. And it's going to be really hard to find cornerbacks that have to do what these Dolphins cornerbacks do on a down-to-down basis if Xavier Howard and Byron Jones are in their 30s and not playing at the same level. So that's why I'm not saying cornerbacks in need. I'm not saying they should draft a cornerback high, but I would be certainly more open to the idea than a lot of other Dolphins fans would be, which brings me to my next point, Paul. You had said a couple of weeks ago that if the Dolphins drafted a cornerback in the first round, you would, quote, throw up all over yourself. Do you stick by that statement?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, the only way I would deviate from that is if they were to trade down from 18 and move backwards, and somebody like J.C. Horn happens to slide all the way down to like 26, 28, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no. And that's just too good a value to pass up at that point.
Sure. Yeah. You'd be exactly right on that. And, you know, J.C. Horn is somebody that on my Dolphins board, number one cornerback by far. And I'm not saying he's the best cornerback by far in the draft. You know, Patrick Surtain certainly competes with him over that, and a lot of people have Surtain higher. But in this defense, the man-to-man coverage, being physical at the line of scrimmage, if Brian Flores and Josh Boyer were to make a cornerback in a lab that fit their defense, it would be J.C. Horn. And the son of Joe Horn, he's physical at the line of scrimmage, like I said, and 6 foot, 205 pounds, 4.39 40, 19 bench reps, 41 and a half vertical, unbelievable measurables, doesn't turn 21 until November. The criticism against him is that he may not be able to be a zone cornerback, which to me doesn't really matter all that much in the Dolphins scheme. I'm not saying he would be bad at it, but he's not a great fit at that because you've got to make more clean breaks on the ball. Horn is more somebody that gets in your face and follows you downfield, and that's what is needed here in the Dolphins secondary. So I see him landing firmly between 6 and 18. I don't see the Dolphins taking him, but if he fell to 18, he would probably be the top choice on my board. I don't care who else is on there. I don't care if he plays in his first year. I think this guy would be a star in the Dolphins defense.
I think he would too. My biggest thing is what I want and the way that I look at a lot of these boards, and that's that whole flat board methodology. I think Greer is in that camp as well, which I like. The fact that, you know, he's got four or five players on a line in some cases, like, okay, I've got all of these guys within a tenth of a point of each other as far as who they are, what we think they're going to be, where we think their ceiling is, and what we think we can get out of them, their leadership skills, all those things that we all know that, that Chris Greer values. And so that's where corner starts to be rough for me unless somebody tremendously slides in round one. Given the positions of need versus the positions of, yes, we're going to eventually need. I do think Igbinoghene is going to be better than a lot of folks believe based on the early experience last year and based on the reports that I heard out of practice and things like that for how much he improved throughout the year. He just didn't get the opportunity. So I do think they need a corner. I'm hoping that they can grab somebody developmental here that can turn into something. Let's not forget, Xavien Howard wasn't a first-round pick either.
Right, and look, I'm not by any means giving up on Noah Igbinoghene. I mean, this is somebody 20 years old. I didn't expect to hit the ground running. I mean, I expected a little bit more out of him, but I expect cornerbacks to be raw in their first year. I mean, Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson, top 10 picks. They went to bad football teams, and they weren't good. I mean, but that's not – I don't think anybody's calling them a bust right off the bat. We shouldn't say that – no Dolphins fan should say the same thing about Noah Igbinoghene. So he certainly deserves a chance here moving forward, and I think he's going to get better and better as we go along. Paul, Patrick Surtain is really that second guy or first guy, depending on how you have your board stack. Obviously, we're familiar with his dad, Patrick Surtain the first. You know, and his dad, it's kind of lazy to compare him just to his father, but it's hard not to. I mean, Surtain was, you know, he was a second round pick because he was not the fastest guy, but technique wise, in terms of physicality, scheme flexibility, he had it all. And to me, was one of the most underrated Miami Dolphins that I've seen in the last 25 years.
No, he is. I mean, I still remember when he got advice, basically, he was really, and we love Sam Madison. You know, Sam's a great dude. Like, I can't say enough good about Sam, but Sam was the talker between the two of them. So Sam got more notice even when Surtain was outplaying him. And it wasn't until Surtain started talking that people started turning and looking and going, oh, okay. And he started getting that Pro Bowl recognition. He was very unheralded when he just came in, did his job with his mouth closed. So it was good to see him start to get the recognition towards the end of his career.
I thought Madison was the better cornerback, but I thought Surtain was the more well-rounded one. Here in Miami. And then you had Jerry Wilson after that. Gosh. So anyway, but Patrick Surtain the second, I'm not saying he couldn't play in this man-to-man defense here that the Dolphins have. He ran a 4.42, but I don't think he quite plays up to that speed. He's more of a technique guy, and cornerbacks in this defense have to cover a lot of ground. It'll be interesting to see how high he goes on draft day and if teams – value the technician he is over the pure athlete that J.C. Horn is. I expect Surtain still to go first. Firmly, they're possibly number 10 to the Dallas Cowboys. Then after that, I mean, it's a pretty deep class, but it's hard to pick one specifically here for the Dolphins. You know, the next two guys on the consensus board, we should say, Caleb Farley and Greg Newsome. Greg Newsome from Northwestern, I think he'll be a solid first-round pick, but he's going to be that for a zone team. He's not really a bump-and-run type of guy, somebody who plays kind of like Brent Grimes did with the Dolphins, where he plays off the line of scrimmage, clicks and closes, trusts his eyes, has great feet. And then you've got Caleb Farley, who's an interesting scenario here because he was supposed to be the top or the second cornerback here in the draft, but he's starting to drop now because he recently had back surgery. Had back surgery on March 23rd. He had back surgery there on the 23rd. He missed the 2017 season with a torn ACL, opted out of last year, and may play this year, but may not. But that back injury that he had is supposed to be probably a reoccurring injury, or at least something that he's going to have considerable pain with. So, you know, we don't try to be doctors on here, but it's at least a concern moving forward enough to probably drop him into the second round.
It might, and it should, as I don't think I would take him before the second round, no matter how much I like the guy. It's unfortunate that happened with him, but again, it's you can't risk a first round pick on a corner that, even if he recovers properly, you don't know how it's going to affect his game moving forward. You don't know if it's going to affect his running ability a little, like even a hair. That tenth of a second speed that it could shave off for him could be devastating. So, yes, I had him as he would probably be my number one corner if it weren't for that injury. But now I couldn't in good conscience even think about him before round two, even if Miami was in dire need of a corner.
And the back injury he had was a microdiscectomy. That's the same injury or same surgery that Tiger Woods had. And it's a quick recovery, but it's also something that is known to reoccur. Tiger Woods had two surgeries like that. Caleb Farley's already had two. And if you have two, you're likely going to have more. And with that type of injury too, you have to play a physical brand of football with the Miami Dolphins. You have to come up and tackle. That's also going to impact a lot too. So anyway, Caleb Farley, to me, I've got a, unless he has a free fall to 50, completely off my board. I have no choice because it's a shame. He's got long arms. He runs. He's a 4-3 player. Great film. Man-to-man, zone, you name it. He might be my top cornerback in the draft, if not for the injury, but there is the injury. So, Paul, after we get past those top four guys, those top four consensus cornerbacks, you know, you mentioned Melifonwu. Would he be next on your list, or do you have a couple other guys up there that are ahead of him?
I mean – did you mention Greg Newsom?
Yeah, Greg Newsom, zone cornerback. So he'd be somebody that I think he'll go firmly between 18 and 36, probably closer to 18. And because he's such a zone cornerback, I just call him a zone cornerback and move on.
Now, the other one that I've got probably ahead of Iffy there is, well, a couple really. Asante Samuel Jr., who I think the Dolphins have quietly and not so quietly shown some interest in, and then probably Aaron Robinson out of UCF. I like the ceiling with Melifonwu a little bit better, but Aaron Robinson is going to be an NFL starter at the next level. He just, and I apologize, I skipped away from my notes a little bit here, so let me look back for what I had on him, but there's a lot to like with him.
Take a look at that there, because Aaron Robinson and Asante Samuel are the next two cornerbacks on my list too. Because look, Robinson, he doesn't fit every defense, but when he was at UCF, he played really press nickelback in the slot there. And that's exactly what the Dolphins are looking for to challenge Nick Needham. He's 5'11", 186 pounds. He ran a 4.38. 6.89 cone, which really measures the ability to turn and run, and you know, and measures your agility, and you know, he plays a physical brand of football from the slot position too, and I wouldn't discount the possibility that he would have the physical tools to be an outside cornerback. And one thing Brian Flores will like, really good tackler too. So we could be talking about him as a nickelback, as an outside cornerback, maybe even as a free safety down the line, because he's such a good tackler. And you mentioned Samuel too. Last 20 games for Asante Samuel Jr., 24 pass breakups, 4 interceptions, and just 2 touchdowns allowed. So he is a really good man-to-man corner out there in the outside. He's not the biggest guy, he's not the fastest guy, just like his dad, but yeah, I think he's somebody that would fit this defense really, really well too. But the question is, Paul, now with Aaron Robinson and Asante Samuel, we like them both. Are we hoping he falls to 81, or are you okay with the Dolphins pulling the trigger there at 50?
I'm okay pulling the trigger there at 50, but What I will say, though, too, is there's a few guys later in the draft that I think you might be able to get the value from that you would from a Melifonwu, and get them a lot later. And actually, I'm going to go with Aaron Robinson's running mate from 2 years ago in Tay Gowan. Tremendously huge upside. I think he was actually the better of the two corners, but he opted out of this past season. So it's, I mean, he's what, 6'1", I think a 190. He ran a 4.47 40, which is not terrible. I know everybody wants the 4.39s, but, you know, it's a half of a tenth of a second or a 20th of a second, whichever way you want to look at it. I want to say he only allowed 20 catches for about just under 300 yards in 2019 before opting out of 2020. Wow. And, you know, tremendous upside. It's he was outplaying Aaron Robinson, and then he did not play this past year, so no one really knows exactly where he's at. So he may be one of those sleeper steals for somebody later on. And we already know what UCF's scheme was because we just talked about it with Aaron Robinson.
Yeah, and he was a big, tall, skinny boundary guy out there. And Robinson was in the slot, and your boy Richie Grant was out there at the free safety spot. So you got three NFL-caliber players out there. And, yeah, he did opt out this past year. And if people that don't know the story about that and why he opted out, nobody can blame him for that, because his story was, and he did an interview with PFF, that he actually gave his grandmother and several other people in his family COVID. He actually spread it to them, as well as his premature baby. So at that time he said, look, it's not worth it. And Gowan had everything to gain by playing this past year for UCF. And people are all over the board on him. Mel Kiper has him as one of his top 10 cornerbacks. PFF has him as a third rounder. But on the other side of that, a lot of people, especially Tony Pauline from Pro Football Network, have him as an undrafted free agent. So people are all over the board on this guy, but can play man-to-man on the outside. Also, and somebody else who can too, Paul, Benjamin St. Juste, really a body, beautiful cornerback who did a great job during Senior Bowl week. He and Ifeatu Melifonwu really have that same body size, that, you know, 6'3", and they can run, but they're very, very rough around the edges. So when we start getting in to early day three, maybe late day two, then I think that's when you can start to expect them come off the board.
Yeah, and another guy as well, possible day three, and Jimmy Shore brought him up in chat. Israel, I'm going to butcher this, but...
Yeah, you are.
Mukuwamu.
You know, okay.
I didn't do too bad there, you know. Like,
bad call? Way to go, bud.
It's, but no, I mean, 6'4", 212. I don't have a 40 time on him at the moment.
I don't think he ran.
He had a leg issue, I believe. So but yeah, no, he's an intriguing guy and somebody that is not as physical as you would expect for his frame. But I'd be very intrigued to see how Miami could develop him out there as a potential boundary replacement eventually, or just somebody to be that body, because we've seen corners go down year in and year out.
When I look at him, I'm kind of reminded of a bigger Sean Smith, which is incredible to say because Sean Smith was massive. I'm pretty sure what he's 6'4".
Yep.
And it's at a certain point, that's too big, you know, because in this defense, you're expected to turn and run and stay with a lot of receivers. And unfortunately, I think that's going to be the thing that really drops him. I think you're looking at a Brandon Browner type of zone cornerback, and I'm not sure that fits the Dolphins defense. But another thing is maybe you look at him at safety if he's smart enough, because he can hit, he is big, and maybe there is a place for him. Other boundary cornerbacks I see too that are kind of intriguing. Keith Taylor from the University of Washington, almost 6'3", unbelievably smooth turning and running. He showcased that at Senior Bowl week as well. He's not all that physical, but he's very smart.
Go ahead and repeat that. We lost you a little bit there.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, good. Hey, I've got an Ethernet cord in for all of our listeners here too. So we don't have earthlink.net down here anymore. So but yeah, the Keith Taylor, the cornerback from Washington, yeah, very smooth hips. It's hard to believe the guy's almost 6'3". I think he would fit in real well in this defense because he can tackle and he's smart too. One thing about him though, zero interceptions in his career at Washington. Not one single freaking interception. If he had more, I think we'd be talking about a second or third round pick, probably more of a day three guy now. And also Ambry Thomas from Michigan is a thin, fast boundary cornerback. Not very big, very good at the line of scrimmage though. And I think he could possibly be somebody that you get in the fourth or fifth round that plays on the outside a lot of snaps, maybe kick Byron Jones in periodically too. So yeah, a lot of boundary guys there, Paul, a lot of slot guys too.
Yeah. And another guy I like later in this draft is, and I know we've talked about him briefly. I think I even took him in the mock draft that we did on the air anyway. Shamar John Charles out of Appalachian State. Shamar, how big is he? I forget exactly how.
I don't have the measurables. This isn't an open book test for me, Paul.
He's about 5'10". I won't get into his arm length. I'll let you touch on that if you want to. But it's he was solid, and I can't figure out why he and Paulson Adebo are so low on a lot of these draft boards, because if you go back to their tape, they don't run slow. They're fast. They tend to lock guys down. Allow low percentage of catch rates, and they're sitting there on a lot of draft boards at 25, 30, 40 down the list. And there's a few guys every year I don't get it with, and with these two, I don't get it, even though I wouldn't put them top 10. I think that they are going to be tremendous steals for somebody in the fifth or sixth round.
Yeah, Adebo is on my do not touch list, not because I don't like him, but again, I see him exclusively as a zone cornerback because he plays off ball, and if he gets up man to man, I don't think he has the play strength to stay with receivers downfield. I'm just not feeling him in this type of defense, and he's not a great tackler either, but he is talented. There's no doubt about that. But he and Greg Newsome are two players. If this were the Dolphins defense from 5 or 6 years ago where they played so much zone, I would love these two players. This type of defense, I would have to pass. A couple other players while we're on the subject I would pass on. Kelvin Joseph from Kentucky is an intriguing prospect, but so inconsistent. He was at LSU. He transferred after having some problems there. He was suspended for a 2018 bowl game. Just very, very inconsistent, but very high upside. I mean, he went up against Devontae Smith in the SEC, and he played really well. He didn't allow a catch when he was on him and had an interception, very impressive one, where he boxed him out in the end zone, which I guess at 166 pounds isn't hard to do for the guy. But now look, hey, Devontae Smith's still high on my board, but 166 pounds, God, jeez. Eric Stokes, I'm also not very high on. He's out for me. Thin and choppy, not a good tackler, not high on him in general. Just receivers get open very easily against him, and I just don't see him fitting this defense at all. Shakir Brown, 4'6", 240, and you know my rule with linebackers and 4'7", 540, you're out. Same thing a cornerback. If you run slower than a 4'6", you're out. So Shakir Brown, sorry, you're a good football player, but you're not turning and running with receivers all the way down the field in this defense.
No, Shakur was a guy I was very disappointed when I saw his 40 time, just because there was so much to like about him, including his ball skills, including his return ability once he intercepted the ball. I was very disappointed. Now, another guy that I really want to see put it together a little bit more at the next level and falls under that, trust Flores and Boyer and the coaching staff to get the most out of some of these physically talented guy would be Robert Rochelle out of Central Arkansas. He's basically has prototypical size, 4.39 speed, all of the things, but just you watch him play and he just hasn't figured out how to put it all together yet. And I could see that being somebody that if he were to slide a little bit, Greer and Flores would want to take a flyer on and see what he can turn into. Now, one guy I'm going to let you talk about, but I know he's completely off your board. He's not completely off my board, but I'm going to throw it to you for Marco the Shoe Chucker Wilson.
Marco Wilson has incredible physical tools and is a gifted cornerback. I mean, he ran a 4.38, had 26 bench reps, 40 plus vertical. I mean, and that as a freshman, he started at cornerback and CJ Henderson didn't. And CJ Henderson went 9th overall last year. So that speaks to his talent level, but he could never put it together. And it's just after the play, bonehead play after bonehead play, just so many flags, both for pass interference. But my favorite one that you're probably referring to is this past year. It is a 34-34 game. Florida's 8-1 playing 3-5 LSU. 34-34 with a minute and a half left. Florida stops LSU. It's fourth down. They're getting the ball back. Except after the play, Marco Wilson ripped off the ball carrier's shoe and threw it 30 yards downfield.
It was a good throw.
It was a good throw. You should switch to cornerback or quarterback in a different league. And then after that, a lot of you probably saw the game here. LSU goes down the field, kicks a field goal, ends up winning the game. Florida's 8-2 instead of 9-1, which obviously in college football is major. So, no, I don't see – look, Brian Flores and Josh Boyer – actually, let's just stick with Flores. Brian Flores is not going to have you as the last line of defense and then try to teach you to not be a bonehead. That's not going to happen here. That the what was that wall they had? The makes no mistakes wall, the TNT wall. Takes
TNT
no talent.
Wall, what I refer
takes
to as
no talent,
dumbass
excuse
wall.
Me. He would be running suicides back and forth all throughout the summer if they drafted this guy. So no, he's off the board. Maybe somebody strikes gold with him.
Yeah, I won't take him quite off the board yet. But I think there's a conversation or two that would need to happen before I'd be comfortable with them taking him. Now, if Flores says he talked to the guy and he's not concerned, then Flores has earned that credit from me. And, Kat, I can't remember if you mentioned this already. I know we talked about him in our Senior Bowl coverage. I know you've got to be about as disappointed as I do in DJ Daniel and his 4.62 speed.
Yeah, he's gone too. And he was behind Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell. Is a physically talented guy, but didn't run very well. I think he plays faster than that, but there's also not a lot of reps there too. They're also probably have a fourth cornerback named Mark Webb that probably gets drafted in the 6th or 7th round as well out of Georgia. So yeah, I could take him or leave him. If he were there for the Dolphins in the 7th round, I think I'd be okay with it, but he probably gets taken a little bit higher. In the slot, I look at a few of these guys here. And one guy I'm not going to say I'm going to defend, I like more than other people, is Sean Wade from Ohio State. He had a terrible season. And the deal with him is, had he come out last year, I did my consensus board just a week after the 2020 draft for the 2021 prospect. Sean Wade was 10th on that list. One spot behind Marvin Wilson, the defensive tackle from Florida State, will probably go in the 4th round too. But the deal with Sean Wade is he was supposed to show this year that he was going to move to the outside, take over for Jeff Okuda and Damon Arnett at the corner spot. He didn't. He had a terrible year. But as a slot cornerback or a safety, this guy is 6'1", 193 pounds, 4.46, can tackle. I think if you take him for what he is, which is a slot cornerback, maybe a safety, maybe a bigger Bobby McCain, you might get a steal in the 5th round.
Yeah, and another guy I think could be a steal and possibly in the 7th would be Brandon Echols out of Kentucky. I wish he was a little bit bigger, but given the fact that he was solid in college, he runs 4.36, I think he could pretty much run with anybody out there. And if you can burn a 7th round pick to go out and grab Echols, those are flyer picks for me anyhow.
Yeah, same goes for me with Mark Gilbert, the cornerback out of Duke. You know, runs in the 4.3s And yeah, when you get into the sixth and seventh round, you better be able to play special teams. And if you're going to be a flyer on special teams or a developmental player in the bottom of the roster, you better have the physical traits. That's why Mac Hollins stuck around the league here for so long and why he's still on the Dolphins roster here, you know, 4 years after he was drafted. But even going back earlier in the draft, Paul, one guy I didn't talk about, Tyson Campbell from Georgia, some not very good film from him. He's a toolsy cornerback, great physical skills, 6 foot one, 193 pounds, 32 inch arms, long arms, 4.37 40 speed, never quite put it together at Georgia. He shows flashes, but I think technique wise, you're going to have to really, really refine his game. But I think he does he can pass the eye test there when he's actually showing himself there. So I think he's got some developmental skills. He's a boomer bust type of player for sure. Fifth round, again, somebody I might be interested in. Third might be a little bit too high. Going back to the slot, Kerry Vincent from LSU, 5'10", 185 pounds, was a 2020 opt-out, but in 2019, he had 4 interceptions and 5 or 8 passes defensed. In that 2019 season, strictly a slot guy, kind of a jack of all trades there for LSU and a very dependable guy. So yeah, somebody that I think Flores might take a good look at too in the middle rounds.
So Kat, I think we've named about 107 prospects here in this cornerback one. Anybody else you want to dive into? I think I'm feeling pretty good with where I'm at. I can't remember if I missed a couple, but I'm sure I did.
I'm going to run through 17 more real quick. No, I got 2 more. Trey Brown from Oklahoma, feisty cornerback in the slot. Not sure if he quite has the speed, but looked great during Senior Bowl week and tackles really well. Question is he a little bit too – he tries to grab too much to compensate really for his lack of athleticism. And finally, saving the best for last here, Rashad Wildgoose from Wisconsin. You know, I dog people for going back and graduating college, but I'm really going to dog this guy here for coming out of school and not going back, because this past year, he played in 2 games. One of them was a terrible game, I think, against Michigan State, gets hurt, opts out, and, then declares for the draft. So, but he does have man-to-man cornerback traits in the slot there. So he's somebody I'd be interested in there in that fifth round area too. So yeah, that's really going to round it out pretty much, because we're trying to get through as many names as we can, because it is so hard to predict who the Dolphins would draft a defensive back. And I think they will draft one of these guys.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a corner and a safety that come off the board for Miami at some point during this draft. It'll just be curious to see which ones they actually go with and when, you know, because Greer has shown he will move up after a guy in a heartbeat if he feels that he's a good match. Now, one other guy I would take a flyer on just based off of his physical traits at 6'2", 200 pounds, ran a 4.31, and again, another late guy is Chris Wilcox. So,
yeah, I mean, we're talking about those – fast guys that can be on the bottom of the roster. That,
and he's got size too. So I mean, he's got size. Worth, he's got a fast gunner with size.
Exactly, and that's what you're looking for. And then you hope that they can round into form. And you take flyers on these guys. You hope to get lucky. And in this case, you can get somebody on your 45-man roster if he's worth it. Who's somebody, for example, in the Dolphins? Don Jones. You remember Don Jones back 7 or 8 years ago, where he was a 7th round pick. And was that he fit that profile? He never amounted to much, but he was a special teams guy.
He was fun to watch on special teams.
Yeah, and he started getting on the field a little bit on defense too. That's worth the value as a late 7th rounder. That's the type of guy we're talking about here. And you can bet when the Dolphins drafted Rashad Jones and Jeremiah Bell in the 5th and 6th round, I know there were safeties, but it was because they fit the size speed profile and could get on the field as a special teamer. And then, wow, we've really got something on actual defense too. So,
well, Rashad, part of it was the leg injury, I believe.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I'm with you.
And Bell was an injury too. Yeah. Never mind. Scrap that. That was a bad example there. I'm going to stick with my Don Jones example. for sure.
The Don Jones.
So, Paul, one question here to finish out the show. Yeah. We've talked about 96 corner. Who is what with, you know, where the Dolphins are picking in every round here. Who is one cornerback that we've talked about that you can point to where if the Dolphins drafted him at a specific spot, you would say that's great value? And I'll start with mine to give you a little bit of time to think about that. Mine would be Aaron Robinson at 81. And he's somebody I expect to kind of go in the second round, but he may not fit every scheme. And you may have to just be looking strictly for a slot cornerback. And one guy I'm not going to dive into again, we'll talk about him on a safety show, but Elijah Molden is the same one. If you get Elijah Molden or Aaron Robinson at 81, I think that's tremendous value with what should be the Dolphins' fifth pick in the draft there in the third round.
Well, I know Jat Hammer wants Creed Humphrey at number 18, but for thanks, Jat. Much appreciated, brother. For me, I would have to say, just based on some of these draft boards out there, if Tay Gowan is there really anywhere from the fourth round on, which is a very realistic possibility, I'd sprint to the podium to grab the guy. That would be insane value that he slid that far, and it's realistically possible given the number of corners that a lot of folks have ranked above him.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet there, and that would be a good flyer, and he could fall because he has 1 year of production, and you know he doesn't quite fit every scheme, but I think he can be a man-to-man guy in this type of defense too. So, Paul, anything jump out for you from the chat before we sign off here?
Not really. Some debates going on about the tight end position. You know, I'm curious where you fall in this, Cat, because there's a debate going on. I'm already putting my two cents in. Somebody said Gesicki's greater than Pitts. Maybe right now because he's got a little professional experience, but the upside is tremendously better for me on Pitts compared to anything we've seen at tight end in a very long time. But yeah, Gesicki's probably better than Pitts at volleyball. So there's that. I don't know where you fall on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think physically Pitts is better. I mean, I think it, comparing Pitts to anybody is rare. I mean, I've said I think as far as the thing Gesicki is good at, which is skying high and winning in contested catch situations, there may not be a better tight end in the business outside of, you know, Travis Kelce and Darren Waller. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Kyle Pitts with me, is that I don't want this to be a situation where you draft Kyle Pitts sixth overall, and then the next year Mike Gesicki's out the door. I think that's a misuse of value. You drafted Gesicki in the second round. He became better than what you thought. He's got to stay too, and you've got to make that work, and that's part of the evaluation if you're going to draft Kyle Pitts, as far as I'm concerned.
And what I'll say as well to support that is I think if you draft Kyle Pitts, you immediately call Mike Gesicki's agent and try to get an extension worked out now. Because if you've got Pitts and Gesicki on the same field, they are both going to have a huge year together. And I think the huge year that Gesicki would have playing opposite Pitts would make a contract very prohibitive next offseason.
And in a worst-case scenario, I think you may – maybe you see Gesicki obviously play another year with the Dolphins, but then get franchised after that, because the franchise tag for a tight end is not as high as other positions. And I think he'd be very well worth franchising 1 year, $11 million, and hopefully, you know, things can get worked out in the future with him too. So that all factors into the evaluation there with him. And to go back on my value comment, too, JC Horn at 18 is the best value as far as I'm concerned. But realistically, because I don't see Horn falling past 12 or so, Aaron Robinson or Elijah Molden there in the third round is where I'm at. And that's going to do it for our breakdown there of the cornerback class. Not a huge need for the Dolphins, but a position we should see the Dolphins address here in some round of the NFL draft. And we're going to be back with safeties here on Saturday. And finally, we're going to wrap it up with one of the biggest needs, the edge class, and a very robust one there on Sunday. We're also going to do our top Miami Dolphins specific boards, top 36, because we know we'll get three of those players. And then Paul and I are going to wrap it up on Tuesday, throwing Paul a bone here because, you know, I hate mock drafts, a dueling mock draft, first round. And we're going to keep tally of those points on draft day when we're here on Thursday. We hope you all can join us. Thank you very much for being part of our NFL draft coverage. We appreciate all of you. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, all of our social media outlets, the Fansided Network, Finn Fanatic. And you can follow Paul and I on Twitter. I'm Brian Kett, NFL. Paul is Fanatic _ pick. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin side.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.